And we're holding on page Hey in Vava Kamma, Os Yud Aleph. So, given that the topic of the Perek is mostly about Shosh Nogach, Dalad Behei, an ox that gored many times, eventually the ox becomes a Mord, and if it killed people, really, even if it's a Tam when it killed people, then it has to be given Skila, and the Pasuk says, V'lo Ya'ochel As Besorah, you're not allowed to eat the flesh, and the Gemara explains that means it's also Bahana, even if you were to Shecht it after it was condemned and before it was actually Shechted. So the Gemara discusses, that you're not allowed to have any animal from any part of it, including the skin. So that leads to the so how exactly do we learn that? So one way of learning that is from the fact that it says v'lo ya'ochel es besaray, where the word es, a lot of times, as we're going to talk about, that is one way of looking at it, is that we darish from the word es to mean something secondary, and therefore it means therefore it means the skin. And in this week's parasha, Esa Shemayim ve'Esa Aretz, you have the drasha that means Esa Shemayim, including everything that's in the heavens, and Esa Aretz, including everything that's in the earth. The other way of looking at it is we can't darsh an S like that, and then we learn it instead from the fact that it says Uvala Shonaki, which literally means the owner of the ox will be clean, meaning innocent, meaning he's not chai of anything further except losing his ox. But the Gemara also darshans it noki, as in, like you say in English, cleaned out, as in he loses all rights to anything from this ox. So therefore, even its skin. So why do we have these two different ways of looking at it, whether we darshan es or not? So the Gemara says Tani, we learn in a Braisa. So we had this most recently in Kiddushin as well. Shimon Hamsuni, va'amrilo Nechemya Hamsuni, ha'yadurish kol esin shabatora. So Shimon Hamsuni or Nechemya Hamsuni used to darshan all the esin in the Torah. So every time Rashi says also the gams, every time it says esu gam, he would darshan that it's some kind of ribuli, that it's adding something that it didn't otherwise state. But he reached the pasuk that says es Hashem alekecha, you should fear pirush. Then he stopped, because how can you compare anything? How can you compare? He didn't know what he didn't know. Rashi says what else to add. He's afraid. Rashi brings in when we learned this in Kedushin, Rashi phrases it a little bit differently. He's afraid to say that anything else should be comparable to the fear of Hashem. So Marsha says, and that's exactly, that is what Es Hashem Alekecha Tira means. Don't even begin to compare anything else and then to Hashem and fear it like you fear Hashem. So Mephoshim talk about why wasn't he bothered, for example, by Vahafta Es Hashem Alekecha, which is earlier, because Ava, it's not that big a deal. Sure, you can have, for example, it can include Tamid Chachamim, like Rabbi Akiva Darshan's over here, about Moira, it can include loving the Torah itself, it can include, etc. But Moira, like the Gemara phrases it, for example, there's a Pasuk, Umikdoshi Tiro, and the Gemara explains, you're not actually fearing the Bais Mikdash itself, you're fearing Hashem, who commanded us to show respect for the Bais Mikdash. So the same thing, Shimon HaMsuni or Nechemya HaMsuni, he said the same way then, there's nothing else that we could include in Es Hashem Alekecha Tira, so obviously the word Es is not actually adding other things. So he stopped. And that means he withdrew all his previous drushes. So he's the opinion that the Gemara is referring to over here, who won't darshan the S of S Besara, even though, so that's a possibility, or this is S Hashem Alekecha Tira, is in Rosh Hanan. He had come across S Besara back in Parshas Mishpatim. So he had darshan it then, maybe to include the skin, but now that he's taking back all of his drushes, because if it can't mean to add anything over here, then it can't mean anything else either. So therefore, he would be the opinion who can't learn from Es Besaray and has to learn that the skin of the shirt on Niskel is also Bahana in a different way. Omer lo Talmidim, so Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, kol esin shadarasha matahelein, what's going to be with all those droshes on the esin that you did all this time? Omer lahem, and he tells him, kashem shani makabal schar ala jurisha, kashem shani kibalti schar ala jurisha, just as much as I received reward from Hashem for the darshaning them, kaki balti schar ala prisha, the same way I'm receiving and I will receive reward from Hashem for the desisting, for the holding back. So in other words, that's the vote. Maharsha says, why am I holding back? Because of the mitzvah of Mordemokim, because of the mitzvah of fearing Hashem, and therefore not comparing anything to Hashem. Well, therefore, I'm going to receive schar for that mitzvah that I myself did. We talked about when we learned about this in Kiddushin, various other Mephoshim have different approaches, what he means by a received schar, what exactly was a schar, and anyway, you don't do mitzvahs for schar, so what does he mean that I will receive schar? It can mean schar, it can mean the schar as in schar mitzvah, it can mean the schar as in the fact that when a person comes up with a chiddush in Torah, and he's happy about it, that now he's understanding more of the Ratzon Elyon, that itself is the schar, etc., etc. Anyway, Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva Limid, until Rabbi Akiva later on came and taught.
Yeah.
Yidam.
Yes.
Yidam.
Until Rabbi Akiva came along and taught. You could learn something from the S over here. Es Hashem Alekech Atira, L'Rabbis Tamar Chachamim, it comes to include Tamar Chachamim, that you have to fear them like you fear Hashem. An interesting vote on that is, so Taka, why didn't Shimon Ham Suni or Nechemya Ham Suni accept that, and then he can salvage all of his previous Jerushas. So obviously he disagreed with the premise. He disagreed with this idea that you could be L'Rabbis Tamar Chachamim. But a few interesting things in that regard that we talked about when we learned this a few weeks ago in Kiddushin. First of all, Rabbi Akiva himself is really the one who has an affinity for this kind of thing. He, so to speak, stands in for Hashem among the Asar Harugi Malchus. It's brought that all the Asar Harugi Malchus are descended from, or Gugulim, or whatever, of the ten brothers who were involved in selling Yosef. But Rabbi Akiva is descended from Gerim, so how is he? So he, so to speak, stands in for Hashem, who, as we know, also joined in the Cherim over there. So he's perfectly the one position to say that a Talmid Chacham is, so to speak, tantamount to Hashem. But Shimon Hamsuni doesn't hold that way. There's also a vote, actually, Shimon Hamsuni is saying, you know what? Rabbi Akiva looks at what Shimon Hamsuni, look at this, a Talmid Chacham who probably spent years, maybe decades, on all these drushes of S, and he's willing to give it up, and he's not going to even make it, fine, I could salvage it with this, but he's going to go with the MS. There is a Talmid Chacham, the S, that Tira, that Yitaka should have murder, and you should respect such a Talmid Chacham. So that itself, the way that he acted, Rabbi Akiva uses that as to see that, oh, that's the kind of Talmid Chacham that you should have S, Hashem, Alekech, Tira for. There's also a short vote from the Kotzker, as usual. Are there any other clients from the Kotzker who says it also means Es Hashem Alekech Atira, L'Rabbis Tamar Chachamim, a Talmid Chacham has to also remember to Es Hashem Alekech Atira. He shouldn't think he's learning Torah, that's good enough. He needs to remember the notes in our Torah too. Fine. Onward. The end of the Perek talks about the dinim when you have a shor tam versus a shor mu'ad, if it causes out and damages, under what circumstances is the owner responsible? If he guarded it in the normal way, if he guarded it extra well, etc., etc. So then the Mishnah says piska. Rabbi Eliezer omer ein l'shmir el asakin v'chola. Rabbi Eliezer says never mind fences and walls and gates and whatnot to hold back a shor mu'ad. Here we're talking about, even let's say it's mu'ad and it's not chayiv nisa, for example. It was only killing animals or goyim, or for example, the owner wasn't formally warned, etc., etc. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says, once the animal has shown itself to be dangerous, there's no guarding it other than the knife, meaning you got to sheft it. So at that point, no matter what happens, even if he puts up the best gates and fences and whatnot, if it goes out and damages, he's still going to be chayiv. So Omer Rabba, my time did Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer say that? Because the pasuk says v'lo yishmerenu, and he didn't guard it. Now, poshut pshat, we would understand it means that the animal was known to be dangerous, and sure, nagahu mitmel shilshem, and v'lo yishmerenu, and the owner didn't guard it, then here are the consequences. But Rabbi Eliezer is taking v'lo yishmerenu in the sense of do not. He must not guard it, meaning shuvein l'shmir l'zeh, there is no way of guarding it anymore. The Rambam points out, by the way, in his Shoshim of Sefer HaMitzvahs, the word loy in Lashon Kodesh can sometimes mean do not do such and such, all the loysa says, but sometimes it can also mean this cannot be done, or this will not be done, or whatever. It's not a statement, don't do this, but rather a negation. Loy also can mean commandment. It would be one example, and there are lots of other examples like that, that loy doesn't mean don't do it. It means this can't be done, or loy socha lacha b'sharacha is actually alav. That's there. It's the other. But it does mean ein mechor reshus, but it means it's an actual lav. There are actually no less than 8 lavim in that pasuk. Loy socha lacha b'sharacha, masa begoncha, tiroishcha, v'itzarecha, v'choris v'tarecha, v'tzenecha. The Gemara darshins a separate lav from each of those phrases over there. It holds the record, by the way. That pasuk, now that you mention it, has the most mitzvahs in it of any pasuk in the Torah. But no, there are other examples. There are other examples where loy, where loy does not mean do not. It means cannot. It means cannot be done. It's impossible for it to happen, basically. One example, for example, you have kol chayim asher yocham in the adam lo yipodeh. It's not a loy that said do not redeem it. It's a statement. He cannot be redeemed. And then there's other examples like that. So here, Rebbe Eliezer is kind of taking it not as a statement of what happened, that he didn't guard it, but rather as a statement of what has to happen. He cannot guard it. There is no more guarding this animal anymore. Now the only thing he can do is shecht it. Omalei Abayas. Abayas says, if that's how you learn, Elamayata Dichtiv, what about the Pasuk says by a burr, Velo Yichasenu, same grammatical form, and he will not cover it. What are you going to say? Nami shuvein lekisu lazeh? What does that mean? If a person digs a burr in Rosh Hashanah, then there is no more covering it, and there's no way for him to be potter. V'chitema hokinami, you're going to answer, maybe, yeah, maybe once he dug a burr in Rosh Hashanah, he's always chayav, even if he puts the strongest possible cover on it. No, but tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, kisohu karoi, if he covered the burr properly, with a solid enough cover, like manhole covers or something, so that nothing can possibly fall in, the nafal secha shur chamer, and still a shur or chamer fell in. For example, the Gemara talks about later, you could have, let's say, that worms ate, it was a wooden cover, let's say, and worms started chewing on it from the inside, and you can't tell until something actually steps on it. Anyway, a mess, and then the animal dies, potter. He's potter because he covered it as best he could. So you see that just because it says lo yichasenu doesn't mean it's impossible to cover it. So why should lo yishmerenu mean it's impossible to guard it? So Elo, I'm going to buy a high time of the Rebbe Eliezer. Rather, Rebbe Eliezer is basing himself on the following. Kedetanya, we learned in a Braisa, we learned this a few days ago as well, and in the first parak of Amasechta, Rab Nosanom, so how do we know that a person should not raise a dangerous dog in his house? Or he shouldn't have a rickety ladder standing in his house where somebody could climb up it and then fall down and hurt or kill themselves. And we learned there, Marshad pointed out, the point is, even though, for example, the family members are going to already be familiar with the dog, and they're going to be familiar with the ladder, and they're going to know not to get close to it and whatever. Nevertheless, and the dog, in fact, especially you may need it as a watchdog by night or something. Nevertheless, how do you know you can't do that? Shenemav leisosim damim veisecha, as the pasuk says, do not place blood in your house. This is part of the mitzvah of Micah. So therefore, based on that, Rabbi Eliezer is saying the same thing. You have an animal that's known to be dangerous, then already there's no getting around it. You have to get rid of it. You have to shecht it. Tosfos points out, in that case, then what about the burr? And the answer is the burr, at least you could cover it. And under normal circumstances, that cover will prevent anything else from falling into it. Unless, as the Gemara says, you know, you could have unexpectedly if it's eaten through by worms or whatever, by termites. But here with an ox, there's no controlling it anymore. Okay. Nevertheless, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yezer, and the fact is that there are valid ways of guarding a shomor. Okay. So the perek starts by talking about a case where an ox gores a cow. Afterwards, you find a dead baby next to the cow, and the question is it that the cow was pregnant at the time of the attack, and then the shur that gored it killed the baby, and now the owner of the shur is chayev for the value of the baby as well, or is it that the mother had given birth beforehand and to a stillborn baby, and therefore he's not responsible for that? So the Mishnah says that the owner of the ox has to pay a certain amount towards the value of the baby. The Gemara explains that's only according to Sumchus' opinion, who says Mamon Amuto B'Sofet Chokin V'Chom Se Amotzi Mechavel Avaraya. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion of this point of the principle of Amotzi Mechavel Avaraya.
How's this bigger baby Avaraya? How is he going to bring a proof?
If he can bring a proof, then he can. If he happens to find Adim who were around, then good. He has Adim. If not, then there's nothing you can do.
Why would the baby calf die if it wouldn't be for the oxen? How is he going to die?
It could be. Sometimes babies are born stillborn. It happens. So you don't have any solid proof. The Rambam, by the way, mentions an interesting point in that regard. Bechlal, you know, in dinim mominus, same as in anything else, in halacha, you need valid Adim. Ones who are you need Jews, you need men, you need all the various criteria you need for Aiden. Now you shouldn't think, for example, who's going to be around the barns, who's going to be around the animal stalls is usually Avodim and other people like that. You'd think maybe you accept their Aiders. No, rules are rules. You got to have two valid Aiden, or else if you have one Aiden, you make the other guy swear or whatever. But anyway, the point is no Aiden, no case. Anyway, so yes, you have this concept called Hamotzi Mechavel Avaraya. Worth mentioning in this regard, by the way, something that they used to tell when I was in yeshiva about those, for those first few words of the Mishnah, Shor Shenogach Zapara, V'nimtza Ubra B'tzida, to illustrate how sometimes, you have the story goes that a bacher was learning those first few words, Shor Shenogach Zapara, and he starts wondering to himself, why does it describe Shor Shenogach Zapara? Why not Shor Shenogach Zashur? And he starts looking, and then in Rashi, and Tosfos, and Marsha, and Maram, and then this and that, and every Mefarish can't find anything. Wow, this must be a major question. Something great and new that I came up with that nobody ever thought of before. Until he reads the next words of the Mishnah, the Nimsa Ubra B'tzidah. You find the baby next to it. So they used to use that to illustrate how sometimes people jump in to ask a question before they hear the rest of the sentence, you know? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, minayim lahamotzi mechavel avaraya." Where does the Torah tell us of this concept of hamotzi mechavel avaraya? That if you want to collect on a claim, you have to bring valid proof. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, when Moshe is about to go up to Har Sinai for the 40 days, he leaves Aaron and Hur in charge, and he tells them, "Mi val dvarim yigash aleihem." He tells them, anybody who has a din Torah should come to them. So we learn from the word yigash aleihem, he should approach them, means yagish raya aleihem. He should present his proof to them. So therefore we see that he has to bring a proof if he wants to be able to collect. So therefore that's hamotzi mechavel avaraya. Maski for Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi questions that. Hol lomali kra. Why do you need a posik to express this point? Svarahu, isn't it a plain svara? Dekoyev like ke'eva alzila be'asya. The one who's hurting has to go to the doctor. Meaning, in other words, you don't have the doctor doesn't come proactively to a person to ask, are you feeling well or not? If you're not feeling well, then you go to the doctor. So the same thing over here. If Reuven is going to claim something, isn't it logical that he has to be able to bring proof? Otherwise, what case is there? Otherwise, in effect, we can tell him, well, you don't have any proof, then show us even that you're hurting. Rather, Rav Ashi explains the pasuk is actually coming to tell us what Rav Nachman says in the name of Rabbi Bavua. The Amr of Nachman, Amr Rabbi Bavua, minayin she'in miskokin el teveya tchila. How do we know when there is an argument between a teveya and a nitba? You have a plaintiff, you have somebody who comes to Beis Din with a claim, and you have a nitba, the one who's being claimed against, the defendant in English. We listen to the claim of the teveya first. First we listen to the claim of the plaintiff, and then we listen to what the other guy says in return. So Rashi gives an example over here. Reuven takes Shimon to Beis Din and says, I previously lent you a mona, and I have edim, or I have a shtar, or whatever. And Shimon answers, on the other hand, you have something of mine in your possession equal to that, or you have a mashkin that for the debt, and now that mashkin has been depreciated, and now it's worth less. So you owe me for that. What we're going to do is first we're going to deal with Reuven's claim, and as long as his proofs check out, we'll make Shimon pay the money. Then, if Shimon has a counterclaim, then we'll deal with that next. We'll deal with the tefisa or the mashkin or whatever. The Shach on Shulchan Aruch points out another naftamina as well. We know there's the concept of moidu b'miktas. We know there's the concept if Reuven says you owe me 100 and Shimon says no, I only owe you 50, then he's chayev. It's one of those three cases. It's one of the three cases where minat Torah he has to take a shavur. I think Mark explains in a few places why it is. Psychologically, Einod amazed punter from Nebal Choyva. He's not prepared to deny the whole claim, where either because it's for the guy's face or because the guy did him a favor and lent him money. Rashi and Tosfos discuss it in a few places. On the other hand, he doesn't want to admit the whole thing because he can't afford to pay it right now. So he figures, I'm going to claim that I own only a half and stole for time. So therefore, we make him take a shavua. That way, at least it'll be on record that if he doesn't want to swear, it'll be on record. He owes the whole 100, and afterwards they can work out. Afterwards, they can work out terms.
Or there's halach.
There can be halach, there's that too, right? Okay, in any case, the point is, so the Shach points out there can be a nafkamina. Suppose that if Reuven says you owe me 100, and Shimon counterclaims I owe you only 50, that's modu mitzvah. But if it was the other way around, if Shimon had said first I owe you 50, that's halach, and Reuven says you owe me 100, then we wouldn't call him a modu mitzvah. Then he wouldn't take a shvur. So the fact that niskok and latavei tchila makes a big difference as far as the shvur. So how do we know that? Shenema mival dvarim yigash aleihem, as the pasuk says, whoever has a case, yigash aleihem, should approach them. And again, we douch in yigash as yagish dvarim aleihem. He should present his words to them. So he should present his case to them. So therefore, we see that the nitba gets to present his case first in these various cases. However, Amri Nahardoi, however, the Chachamim of Nahardoi pointed out, there are actually some times when we listen to the nitba's claim first. The heichidami, because zili nichse, if his nechasim are going to be depreciated because of it. So Rashi gives a couple of explanations. First of all, let's say you can have let's say, for example, the claim was, like Rashi said, you Reuven, who are claiming from me the debt that I owe you, on the other hand, you have a mashkin, or you have something which I want back. Now, let's say, for example, right now, there are merchants there who are willing to buy it for a higher price. And if he doesn't get it back right away, then he's going to lose that, because then he's going to lose that opportunity, they're going to leave. That would be one example. Another possibility, Rashi says, is, let's say, for example, because of his claim, if in fact he has to make good on the claim, on what Reuven's claiming from him, then he's going to have a fire sale of his properties, and other people are going to figure he's desperate for money. We can buy it cheap. So now, on the other hand, if he gets back his mashkin or his thing that he's claiming from Reuven, then he'll have more assets, and then he won't be so desperate to sell his properties, and then he'll be able to, if he does have to sell them, he'll be able to get a decent price for them. So then, in those kinds of cases, we do, in fact, accept his claim first.
What was that? I didn't understand it.
So in this second case, let's say we said there were two possible cases. One is where the mashkin, he wants to sell the mashkin to somebody else. He has somebody right now who's willing to pay a high price for it, and if he doesn't get back the mashkin as soon as possible, he's going to lose that opportunity. Uh-huh. The second case would be, let's say, for example, Reuven is claiming from him $1,000. Now, right now, he hasn't got $1,000. What would he have to do? He'd have to sell some property of his.
Okay.
The problem with that is, once word gets out that he has to sell as soon as possible in order to raise $1,000, everybody's going to try to take advantage. Yeah. They're going to try to bargain it down to get it cheaper.
Right.
Instead, if he gets back his mashkin, which is worth, let's say, $500, that gives him a lot more breathing space. That gives him, now he's not quite so desperate to sell his properties. Therefore, when he sells them, he'll be able to get a normal price for them. He won't have to be in such a rush to sell. So that would be another example where we do deal with his claim first. Let's see if he is, in fact, entitled to his mashkin, and then we'll deal with the original claim, and then that way he doesn't end up losing out more than necessary.
Interesting.
Yeah. There is a sicha in Chelek Tes Zayin where the Rebbe talks about a deeper point behind this whole discussion over here. What we're saying is, we're talking about a case of Moedim Mitzvahs over here. So the Rebbe develops the idea in the Sticha, when a Yid, who's the Teveya and who's the Nitba? The Teveya is the Yetzahara. He's always trying to Teveya. He's trying to claim against you, do such and such. And afterwards, if you do, then he goes in Teveya, and then he goes and claims against you in the Beis Din Shamayla. So what happens if a Yid actually succumbs and does an Avera, he's not really koifer hakel, he's not denying Hashem entirely, he's moedim mitzvahs. At best, he's giving in partially to the Yetzahara. After all, if nothing else, Nefesh HaLekis doesn't want to go along with it. As the Alter Rebbe puts it in Tanya, Hoisa Ba'am Na'ita, the Nefesh HaLekis is always faithful to Hashem, even when the person who houses that Nefesh HaLekis is doing an Avera. So therefore, he's a moedim mitzvahs. Normally, what do we need to do then? We need to make him take a Shavua. Which is, a shvur is mashbiyanoisai, and also masbiyanoisai, that he's filled up with an extra measure of energy from Hashem to be able to overcome the Yetzirah. But there can be, because zili nichse, the person might instead say, you know what, I don't have time for all of that. The Yetzirah is coming with claims and whatnot against me. I have no time for that. I'm busy. I have my avoida to do. So I can't take time to listen to the Yetzirah and his tvius and his blandishments and whatnot. So then we say, fine, we're not going to listen to him. Instead, we'll listen to you first. You get the upper hand over him, and you don't have to deal with his claims and his whatnot, because you put yourself beyond that. An interesting point also in this regard is, that's Chassam Sofer, I think it is, points out, this pasuk that we're saying over here, Mival Dvorim Yigash Aleihem, whatever we learn from it, whether we learn Amotzi Mechavel of Araya, or whether we learn Niskok in L'Tevei Atchila, this pasuk is, like I said, it's when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to go up onto Har Sinai for the 40 days to get the whole Torah after Matan Torah, and he leaves Aaron and Chur in charge. Why Davka then? Why is this principle enunciated in the pasuk Davka then? And the Chassam Sofer says an interesting point. A Dayan, to a certain extent, a Dayan can, there is a concept that a Dayan can follow his gut feelings sometimes, that Amman talks about it in Hilchos Sanhedrin. But by and large, a Dayan does have to follow the evidence in front of him. He has to listen to the evidence, and then it can be, for example, he realizes he has a sixth sense or something, he realizes that he smells a rat over here, so then fine, he doesn't have to follow the evidence exactly. He can sort of wing it based on what he detects like that. But basically, he does have to listen to the evidence first. On the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need that bechlal. Like we talk about Mashiach, Murach v'doyin, you can smell and judge based on that, just based on his perception, l'mayla mitam v'das, of what the person is thinking and what the truth is. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do that. So therefore, with Moshe Rabbeinu, you didn't need any of this hamotzi mechavel v'raya and this skokim l'tevei atchila. If two people come for a din Torah in front of Moshe, he's going to know the truth no matter what they're saying and no matter what evidence they're presenting. But now that he's going up onto Har Sinai and leaving Aaron and Hord in charge, and they're not of his caliber, they don't have that ability to be Murach V'doyin, so he has to spell out for them, now, from now on, during these 40 days, you're going to have to know, you're going to have to follow these rules of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya and this Kokin L'Tevei Atchila.
On a different line, it's sort of like this. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Let's say there are two very valuable paintings. Mm-hmm. Each one $500,000, okay?
Right.
Let's say $500, okay?
Right.
And so a guy burns one of them, okay?
So now he's caused the other one to be more expensive, right?
The other ones, you know what, the ones
around
$1,000.
Yeah.
So are you saying that because it's worth $1,000, he doesn't owe this guy any money?
No, we're not necessarily saying that. That's a different matter. That's not what we're dealing with over here. We were dealing with something else. We were dealing with each person has a claim against the other on different things. One on a loan, one on a mashkin. And we're saying that if he gets back his mashkin, then he'll be able to sell when he does have to sell property to raise money to pay off his debt. He'll be able to do it at a more decent price. He won't have to be losing out. There's a difference. I'm familiar with your case. I've heard of your case.
You say that he doesn't owe him anything because $1,000.
No.
Right?
Well, he's saying he doesn't owe anything. The other guy says he does. But meanwhile, we're saying deal with the case first. Let him get back his mashkin as long as he has the evidence for it. And then after that, we'll deal with the other. We'll deal with the original case. Yeah. All right. The Mishnah goes on a few blocks later. The Torah describes a case in Parshas Mishpatim, and the Mishnah spells out the details. Odom Shem is Skaven Machaveri, a person who was intending to hit somebody else, the Hika is the Isha, and accidentally he hit a pregnant woman, the Yotsu Yavadah, and then her babies came out, she miscarried. Meshalom Dmei Vlodis, so he has to pay for the value of the babies. The Torah says on it, the Venosan Biflu, and he has to give according to the judges. Kate and Meshalom Dmei Vlodis, how does Dmei Vlodis work? How do we evaluate that? Shomen is the Isha, Kamehi. What? No, the woman herself, the Pasuk mentions both possibilities. First, First, it says, Velo Yia Osoin, that the woman herself stayed alive. She was injured, but she wasn't killed. Then the Pasuk goes on, Vim Osin Yia. The next pasuk goes on, Vim Osin Yia, that if she was killed. Then, Venasata Nefesh, Shachas Nefesh, and then Machlokes Tanoim, what that means exactly. Does it mean that the one who hit her is actually Chayiv Misa, or does it mean that he just has to pay for the value of her life as well? That's the Gemara discusses here and in various other places, the question of if a person intended to hit Reuven and accidentally hit Shimon, or to kill Reuven and instead killed Shimon, or in this case, he intended to kill Reuven and he killed Rochel, is he Chayiv Misa or not? The Gemara discusses that in a couple of places. In any case, here we're talking about the woman stayed alive. It's just the fact that before she was pregnant, and now she's lost her children. So Kate said, Meshalom's Mei Vlodis. How does Mei Vlodis work? Shomen is the Isha, Kamehi Yofa Adshala Yolda. We evaluate how much would she have been worth before she gave birth. The Kamehi Yofa Mishi Yolda versus how much she's worth after she gave birth. Meaning if we were to sell her as a slave woman, how much would she be worth when she's pregnant, where then the prospective buyer would be getting the babies as well versus afterwards. And then the difference is what this fellow pays. Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says that doesn't work. In that case, a woman improves after she gives birth, which the Gemara is going to explain what he means by that. Ella, Shamanus of Lodis, Kamehinyof, and rather we have to evaluate the actual babies themselves, how much they would have been worth, the Nosanabal Holani pays the owner according to that. We figure out, basically, assuming that these babies had been born healthy, how much they could have been worth if a person were to sell of newborn children and as slaves, how much they would be worth, and then that's you figure out on that basis.
You could argue that it might be a professor or a basketball player that makes $1 million.
No, but at least you could figure out, you don't know that, obviously, but at least you could know, for example, a regular, let's say, fine, a minimum wage worker or whatever. Remember, the Gemara discusses those details, but anyway. So the Gemara says, my comma, what does Reb Shimon Gamliel mean by saying that after she gives birth, she improves? It sounds like Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying she's worth more after she gives birth, and the Tanakama had said that she's worth less because you have to deduct the babies. So what's the argument exactly? Omer Rav Rabba Hochi Kama. What he means is v'chiisha mashvachas kodem shetelad yosim alacha shetelad. Does a woman's value improve, and does her health improve before she gives birth more than after she gives birth? After she gives birth, after all, the birth itself could be dangerous. She could die in childbirth. So on the one hand, yeah, a prospective buyer might want to buy her at a higher price because he may get the babies as well. But on the other hand, he also stands to lose everything if she dies in childbirth and the children don't make it either. So therefore, how can you figure on that basis? Ella, therefore, he says, Shomanus of Lodis, Venosim Abal, therefore we have to figure the value of the children individually without reference to her. And then that's the amount he pays the owner. Why this is an Ein Yaakov, I'm not sure. I guess there is the point the Gemara does mention elsewhere, the point that childbirth is an inherently dangerous time. You have the Mishnah in Shabbos, for example, Al-Sholosh Averis, Noshim Mesis, Meshas Lodos, and other such things. So the point is, in other words, to realize that it is an inherently dangerous thing, and it's a time to daven that the birth should go well and the babies should be healthy. A few blocks later, it starts talking about dinim involving where a person digs a pit, a burr, which is one of the Avos Nezikin, and various dinim in that regard, as far as various types of water pits. One thing it talks about is that if a person digs a pit for the sake of the rabbim, so that they can go and draw water from it, then that's fine. He can do that in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, where under normal circumstances, he has no business digging in the middle of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim.
Does he have to cover it up?
Has to cover it up still, but the point is we can't say that he did something careless in the first place. So the Gemara tells him, "Tanabanan, Maisi the Bitesh on Nechunya Choifer Shichin. It happened with the daughter of Nechunya Choifer Shichin. So this Nechunya, that was his name. Choifer Shichin means he would dig pits. He would dig pits, and then Rashi explains he would give them over. He would dig them, I guess, on his own property or something, or maybe not. Maybe even it was in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but whatever. He would then give over ownership of them to the Rabbim, so that when the Oyler Regalim, when people are coming on the Oyler Regal, then they could use them for water supplies on the way."
That's okay.
In fact, the Mishnah in Shkolim actually lists him as one of the officials of the Beis Hamikdash. The Mishnah mentions over there were 15 officials in the Beis Hamikdash in charge of different things, of the physical plant and upkeep and whatnot of the Beis Hamikdash and different things like that. And one of them is Nechunya Choifer Shichin, who's responsible for the water supplies of Yerushalayim.
The same Nechunya with the rain.
No, that was Choni Amagel.
That's Choni Amagel.
They're a different person. The Yerushalmi says on him, by the way, that he was an expert geologist. He knew exactly, he could tell by the rocks where water was going to come out and where there's going to be hot springs and cold springs and whatnot. Anyway, Maisiv Bitesh on the Choni Choifer Shichin, Shenofla Bur Godel. She fell into a big pit, one of the pits that her father had dug for the Oyler Regel. And she's in danger of drowning. So they came and told her, Chanina Mendoza, you should daven for her. And the point is, I guess the pit was really too big and too wide for anybody. I don't know why they're going to him to daven, why they go send somebody in just to get her out. I guess it must have been too big and too deep or whatever for them to be able to. What?
They did both.
I'm sure they did both, but the point is, they didn't have the equipment to get her, I guess. The first hour, after a period of time. Amalahem Shalom, he tells her, it's at peace, she'll come out peacefully from there. She's still alive, and she'll come out of there safe. Shnia Amar Lahem Sholem, the second hour, or after the second period of time, he told them the same thing. Shlishis Amar Lahem Olsa, when it came the third hour, and B'derech HaTeva, at that point, if she was still there, she would have long since already drowned. The Gemara talks about, the Gemara brings the story in Yevamos as well, in connection with, you have a din there, if you see a person fall into a pit like that, if all the edges of it are visible and you can see that he didn't come out, then after a certain amount of time, he can be presumed dead, and his wife would be allowed to remarry based on such edges. So the Gemara brings the story in this connection. So here we're talking about long enough had passed that B'derech HaTeva, she's not going to be alive anymore. Amalahem also, Rav Chanina Mendoza tells them she's come out safely. So afterwards, when they found her, and sure enough, she was safe. Amalah Mihaloch, who brought you out of there? She tells them, there was a ram that came to me. It's Zohar is a male, shall rechelim of the ewes. So a ram, an adult male sheep. The Zokan Echad Manhigoy, and there was an old man leading it. The ram represents the ram of Yitzchak, and the old man leading it is Avram. And they got me out of there. So in short, in other words, it was the schus of Avram Avinu. It was the schus of Avram Avinu that got her out of there. Amru Loi, so they asked Rav Chanina Mendoza, Noviata, are you a Novi? How do you know that she's safe in there and that she's going to get out safely? And when she eventually came out, Amru Lahem, he tells them, Loi Novi Anoichi, Loi Ben Novi Anoichi, I'm not a Novi, I'm not a son of a Novi, Elak, or a Talmud of a Novi, Elak Kach Amauti, but I said to myself, it has to be this way, Oise Dovasha Oise Tzadik with Starboy, this very matter that the Tzadik is so concerned about and makes such efforts about to dig wells for the Oyler Lagolin, for the Oyler Regal, so they should have water. You Yukoshel Bezare, could it be that his own children will stumble in it and will end up drowning in it? So therefore he says, I could tell from that, automatically, based on that, that I know how Hashem runs things, and therefore it can't be that his daughter herself would die of such a thing.
This was his own daughter.
This was Nechonia's own bitter, Nechonia Chayvashim.
Yeah, sure.
The daughter of Nechonia, yeah. Yeah. Omer of Acha, Acha became Mesa bitter, Mes Bnei Batsama. Nevertheless, later on, Nechonia's daughter, is the Girsa of Enyaka, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara, is his son, died of thirst. In other words, despite what Rav Chanina Mendoza is saying, on the other hand, there was something else not involving water, involving a lack of water, that killed one of Nechonia's children. The difference being that, in other words, that she should drown in the actual water is not going to happen, Rav Chanina Mendoza says, but here it wasn't water, it was a lack of water. So, Shenemo, Svivav Nisara Ma'od, as the Pasuk says, around Hashem is very stormy, Malanli, the word Nisara is related to the word Saira, hair. That Hashem is particular with his chassidim even to a hair's breadth. So Nechonia being a tzaddik, then therefore Hashem does very strict judgment on him and in this case on his son, because as the Gemara says in various places, Rachman al-Tzan, parents can be punished through their young children, through their young children. This is why we say Baruch Shabbatanani when a boy becomes bar mitzvah. But in other words, the point is, there's something that Hashem judged Nechonia and found him lacking in something, and because Hashem treats tzaddikim, who are svivav, who are around him, very strictly, so therefore this happened. Reb Nechonia Omer Mehocha, Reb Nechonia, which is Bepashto, it's not the same as the Nechonia we were just talking about, says, Mehocha, we have a different pasuk, we receive the same point, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik and tzaddikim chot asayra, as the pasuk says, Keol naratz v'soid kedoshim rabba, Hashem who was exalted, who was mighty and powerful in the great gathering of the holy ones, the tzaddikim, the noral kol svivav, and Hashem is awesome over all those who surround him. Meaning again, the tzaddikim who surround Hashem at a close level, then they are the noral. Hashem acts in a way that's very, very awesome and fearsome against to them. In order to clean up anything from them, so they have a pure Olam Haba. So therefore, so that's another way of understanding what happened to Nechonia's son.
Because
either of these psukim, that Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik from tzaddikim kochot asayra, that Hashem is part of, either pasuk expresses this point, that either svivav nisara ma'od, or v'noda akol svivav, two different psukim that express the same point, that Hashem is very exacting with the tzaddikim who are close to him.
Even with Atzadik himself.
How
is he going to...
Yeah, in this case, through his child, right. And you have a lot of different reasons for that. Among others, is because that way the lesser people should take a lesson from it and realize if Hashem judges even the tzaddikim so strictly, how much more so us. We have that expressed in one of the piyutim. We say on Rosh Hashanah, im tzaddik kol chayfetz. The whole piyut is built around that idea. You have look at Odom, look at Avraham, and Yitzchak and Yaakov and the Shvatim and Moshe and Aaron and so on and so forth. Great tzaddikim throughout the generations where Hashem judged them most strictly to the end degree, and when he finishes off of there, Yovinu Kol Yitzurei Eretz, we simple people should realize if that's how the tzaddikim, the tiniest averus are treated so harshly, how much more so it should be us. So Hashem, please have rachmanos on us, and we'll do better. So there's that. There's the famous mashal that a pure white shirt shows even the tiniest stain, and therefore tzaddik is like that. There's a lot of different ideas in this regard. So in this connection, Amar Rav Chanina, Kol HaOmer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatran Hu, anybody who says that Hashem is willing to let things slide. So a Vatran, to give an example, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, Iyo Vatran Ramamone Hava. The Gemara tells us over there that Iyo, for example, when he went to a store, and he had bought something for which he should get a half a prutta of change, so he would be Mevatran, he would say, you know what, I don't need it, keep the change, like they say in English. So that's a vatra. I'm like, there's something that really, I really am owed, but I'm going to let it slide. Anybody who says Hashem is like that, yivotru chayev. His life should be considered forfeit, should be considered hefker. Because then that causes people to think that you can get away with averus. So shenemar, as the pasuk says, Patsur Tomim Patsur, Hashem is the rock, Tomim Polai, his deeds are perfect, kichol drach of mishpat, all of his ways are justice. So it's not that Hashem is willing to let things slide. Hashem is Rachum Lachanan, Erech Apayim, and so on and so forth, as the Gemara is going to go on to quote next. So Hashem will give a person a chance again and again to do the, but eventually somehow the debt has to be paid off, either with tshuva or with something else, such as Yisurim, or such as things that we were just describing with Nechunya's children. But it's not that the Eibishter is going to ignore the thing, or that it's just that he's going to give a chance again and again, and until the person does tshuva. The Yerushalmi when it brings this has this expression yivatru, not yivatru chayav like the Bavli says over here, but yivatru me'oihi, like so to speak, his kishkis ought to be let loose. The Gemara mentions in Cholin that the kishkis, a person's intestines and animal's intestines as well, are arranged in a very precise pattern. And if anything is out of place, then the creature is not going to be able to continue to live. So yivatru ma'ohi, in other words, let them get loose and unmoored from where they belong in the body and go every which way. And then, in other words, the person doesn't have very long to live. If a person talks like that and says that Hashem doesn't care about the little details, so then fine, you know, those little details in his body will also not work the way they're supposed to, in other words. So the Gemara continues. Why does it say in Hashem's midas, in Hashem's yud gimel midas harachamim, erach apayim in the plural, v'loy ksiv erach af, and not erach af, where af is the usual word for anger. Apayim literally means face. So why are we saying erach apayim? Because it's a double thing. Erach apayim l'tzadikim v'lo reshoyim. Hashem is patient to the tzaddikim and to the reshoyim. To the tzaddikim, that Hashem doesn't pay them their schar right away, because he saves it for the mamba, and for the reshoyim, that he does pay them their schar right away, so that they lose it for olam haba. Tosfos points out, actually, in that case, then why is that a midas harachmin for the reshoyim? In fact, a different gemara, different gemaras on the subject seem to take different views of it. Is this for the bad of the reshoyim, or is it for the good of them? And the answer is, it depends how the person reacts to that. The rosha, the fact that he's being given the reward in this world, does it eventually motivate him to do tshuva out of gratitude? Then it turns out to have been a very good thing indeed. If he doesn't, then it would be, it would end up being a negative thing. But the idea is this alva b'soifa lasis tshuva. If it motivates him in the end to do tshuva, ula tshuva, then it comes out it was a very good thing indeed that Hashem was patient with him and didn't just destroy him on the spot, and therefore and now he has a chance to do tshuva and to turn everything around. So the Erech HaPayim L'Tzadikim, we're saying, is that Hashem is patient and doesn't give them the schar in this world for a number of reasons, one of them being, in order to keep it completely for Olam HaBa. Sometimes there can also be a tzaddik, or if he gets too much goodness in this world, then it may cause him to go the wrong way. We have in this week's parasha about Chanoich, for example, what the Rashi says over there, that Hashem knew that he's very susceptible to going the wrong way, and therefore Hashem took him away early. Yeah. All right. Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chavdal of Tishrei. Any yichidus with the chief rabbis of Israel that ever talked about. So we know that gir, a person becoming a ger, is supposed to be a three-step process. There's mila for a man, tvila, and a korban. But bizman hazeh, the Rambam phrases it, there's no korban. Therefore, ger needs mila and tvila, and when the Beis Hamikdash is built, he will bring a korban. Now, does that mean that right now a ger is an incomplete ger because he's missing one of those three steps? No, he's still considered a ger gomel. And the Rebbe discusses over there in that Yechidus, not only is he Ger Gomer for all purposes now, he's a full-fledged Yid with all the dinim of a Yid, but even when the Beis Hamikdash is built, he will remain a Ger Gomer. He will even be able to eat Kodshim, he'll even be able to, his daughter will be able to marry a Koyan, as long as, if he has a daughter who was born after he became a Ger, that daughter is kosher to, as long as, actually in Shulchan Aruch it says if both parents are Gerim, then she shouldn't, but fine, if he's a Ger and his wife is a born Jew, then their daughter can even lachatchila marry a Koyan, and that Koyan might well serve in the Beis Hamikdash as soon as Mashiach comes, where one of his jobs is Bonim Mikdash. So even before this, so the Beis Hamikdash is going to be built before any Korbanos are being brought, this Ger then conceivably could have a grandson who is serving, who's helping to build the Beis Hamikdash before even he himself brings his korban, because the fact that he had his gear nowadays, that's 100% gear. He has a chiyuv to bring a korban, that's a separate chiyuv, and that doesn't impinge at all on his status as a gear.
But if he's a gear, that's the bit of a gear. He can't be a gear once it's a
bit. Once Mashiach comes, we're not going to accept gear in any case. It's a whole different matter.
So there's no korban up
to... No, we're talking about a person who became a gear in our times.
Yeah.
I thought that instead of continuing with Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, maybe we should start on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So let's see what we can do with that. So we have the Alter Rebbe, as we know, rewrote the Shulchan Aruch. He started writing on Adur Basra, a second version of it, which draws a lot more heavily on Kabbalah, but we only have the first four simonim of it. So starting with that, Din Hashkamas HaBoker, the dinim of getting up in the morning. Yehuda ben Tema says, as it says in Pirkei Avos, "Hebe ad kanomer kal kanesher rotz katsviva gibukari." The light as bold as a leopard and swift as an eagle and fleet as a deer and strong as a lion. Lasus sen avicha b'shamayim to do the will of your Father in heaven. What does it mean as kanomer? What does it mean to be bold as a leopard? Shaloi means to not be embarrassed of people who mock him. Gibukari would be where is Gvura mainly found in the heart, to overcome his Yetzirah, like a hero, like a mighty man who overpowers his enemy and knocks him down to the ground. That's what a person has to be, Gibur, against his Yetzirah. So therefore, a person has to be a Gibur on his Yetzirah, like a lion, and be ready to get up even before daylight to serve the Eibishter. He should be the one who wakes up the dawn, as it says, Ira Shachar, as David HaMelech says on himself, I wake up the dawn doesn't wake me up. That's midabaininess. That's what the average person should be doing. Then in the next sif, he talks about what a Yoreh Shemayim should be doing in terms of Tikkun Chatzos. That will deal with afterwards. Mr. Shen.
Okay.
Come on, everybody.